I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Cecil Shorts, Jeremy Branham with you on this Memorial Day. Thanks for all those who have paid the ultimate sacrifice to give us our freedom in this wonderful country. 713-572-4610. So the AFC South, in my opinion, is one of the more underrated divisions in the NFL. And it's not because of what the Texans are doing. But I think there are teams in the top half of this league that can be contenders for the Super Bowl in the AFC. And it's a little tough to say that because you have Kansas City and they are such a juggernaut. And they look like they're going to be very difficult to beat. But at the top of this division with the Colts, what they have done, especially on the defensive side of the ball, if Carson Wentz has a bounce-back year, why can't they be a contender? I love what Vrabel has done with Tennessee. They're so, they're ready to play each and every time. They had the upset win a couple of years ago in the playoffs. Like, it's a couple of teams that lack cachet. Like, there's nothing sexy about Indy. There's nothing sexy about Tennessee. They don't have that buzz. They don't have the attraction that the Chiefs do with Mahomes and that high-powered offense that the Ravens do with the superstar of Lamar Jackson. But to me, folks are sleeping a little bit on the Colts, especially the Colts, and to a lesser degree, the Titans.
Yeah, I agree. I think the Colts, if you look at, to be honest, Carson Wentz couldn't come to a better situation.
Right.
The offensive line is solid. The defense is awesome. He has playmakers all around him. So all he has to do, basically, is be a game manager. If you go out there and don't make mistakes, I mean, they went to the playoffs last year and won a game with Phillip Rivers, an older Phillip Rivers. So if Carson can be just a shell himself, they'll be a very, very good team and Super Bowl contender in the AFC. And then the Titans are, I mean, to be honest, I didn't think Vrabel would be that good of a head coach, but he's doing an outstanding job over there. They have an identity. They stick to their identity. They revamped Tannehill. He's come from, I wouldn't say a bust, but an average career, yeah, or below average in Miami to a solid player in this league as a quarterback. Of course, you got one of the better running backs, if not the best running back in the game right now, who I didn't think would have a good year last year. I'm like, it's tough to go back-to-back and get that many carries. Well, he's obviously different. he's defying odds, and you got a good defense there. So I think they are, and I'll be honest with you, I don't think the Jaguars are that far off. Landry, I know, is big on Jacksonville becoming better. I think I'm not buying in all the way, but I think they can make some noise this year and then eventually be up in the ranks. So you have three teams that can make some noise this year in the AFC South. Two of them being playoff teams from the previous year.
The storylines to me are what intrigues me about the AFC South. Like, the reason I brought this up, Jason Lockenfor of CBS Sports ranked the divisions in the NFL. He ranks the AFC South as the worst division in the NFL. Says not much to see here, but I think the Colts can be one of the top three teams in the AFC with higher potential than that. Like, Carson Wentz a few years ago was mentioned in the same breath as Deshaun, yes, Watson, as two up-and-coming quarterbacks in the NFL that will win multiple MVPs by the time that they're done.
Yep.
And he's going back to his former OC and Frank Reich there in Indy. So if there's anybody that's going to turn him around, it's that guy there. And then he has a really good roster around him as well that puts him in a good position to succeed. And just hitting the reset button sometimes is so important for a guy. Like, the way things were going in Philadelphia, like, it all stacked the deck against him.
Yeah.
The fact that big, Nick Foles won the Super Bowl with him on the bench, that was not good for his career trajectory in Philadelphia, because now, he lost the fans because they wanted Nick Foles. And then when he had some struggles coming back from the injury, didn't have anybody to throw him the football, they were ready to get Carson Wentz out of town. you know, put himself in a tough situation.
Yeah.
Now he goes to Indy where he's going to be loved. People are hoping he's going to be the guy that takes them back to the Super Bowl. And they already have a good roster. So I think Indy's going to be a team to watch this year in the AFC. Tennessee just does it differently. Like, yeah. Kansas City throws the football all around. You know, the Ravens, they'll run it a lot with Lamar Jackson. But, you know, the smash-mouth, old-school football that Tennessee plays, like, it's kind of cool to see the throwback every now and then. And you don't see what they do around the NFL. Jacksonville, like, I don't think they're going to be any good. I think they're going to be a lot of fun to watch. Like, it's going to be really cool to see what Trevor Lawrence does in his rookie season. Is he going to be this great, like a lot of people think that he could be? Urban Meyer, like, guy who's a legend in the college game and one of the best college coaches in the last 20 years, stepping into the NFL for the first time. How does that work? Like, it's going to be really interesting to watch that experiment with Urban Meyer in Jacksonville. The Tim Tebow thing, I think, is all for show. I'm not even sure he makes the roster. I don't think he makes
it for
the
show.
Yeah, I think a little bit.
Really?
I think a little bit. It's to
I know
draw.
He's from Jacksonville.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think he's going to have a chance to make the team. Mm-hmm. But I think part of the reason of bringing him in a little bit is to take a little bit of attention away from Trevor Lawrence. I think there's a little bit of a master plan there. Like, I don't think the signing of Tim Tebow was like, okay, this guy's going to make our 53-man roster. I think the idea behind signing Tim Tebow was, this guy's a good football player. Let's see if he can make the roster. If we had to make the 53 right now, he's probably not on it. But one other caveat that he brings to the table, aside from the football side of things, is he takes a little bit of the attention and the pressure away from Trevor Lawrence. And I think it's also good that he kind of has the ear of Trevor Lawrence a little bit as well. Although, I mean, how much do you want Tebow mentoring Lawrence? Like, he wasn't a great quarterback, but, you know, off the field, things like that, probably a good guy to spend some time around.
Definitely. He's a competitor.
Yeah.
And I think people respect that side of him. He's arguably one of the best college football quarterbacks to ever play. You can say what you want.
I loved him, too.
He was dynamic and his team was dynamic. That Florida team, if you look at it on the roster, oh, my gosh, they were loaded.
Yeah, that would kill some folks.
Going back, I'm not sold on Urban Meyer. I'm worried about his style and how he's going to try to coach grown men. It's not your way or the highway now. You know what I mean? I think Pete Carroll had a good second jump because of how his style of coaching is, right? It's more player friendly. Whereas Urban is my way or the highway. If you don't do it my way, you gotta get out of town. Well, this is not scholarship football. Like, right. These guys are getting, you know, he's making good money, of course. But I think also looking at Tebow, it brings attention to Jacksonville. Like, it brings attention. Urban Meyer brings attention to Jacksonville. Trevor Lawrence brings attention to Jacksonville. What does Jacksonville want in that small market? They want attention. They need that attention. Shad Khan hasn't done well as an owner as far as winning games, right? So what can you do to bring attention there? Shad Khan owns a soccer team overseas in England, so they go to England every year. They go to London every year. His son owns the wrestling company, AWE.
Yeah.
When we saw
AEW.
Saw, you know, Urban Meyer and Charlie Strong make an appearance.
Yeah, they were on the pay-per-view last night, apparently.
So, like, what else do you want? Bring in some money and bring in some attention to Jacksonville, number one overall pick. Urban Meyer, probably the most sought-after coach for a while. You know what I mean? A big name you bring to Jacksonville, and now Tim Tebow, one of the better college football players ever, but also from the Jacksonville area. So he's trying to fill that stadium up. He's trying to bring some attention to that team in the offseason. So far, I think they've been doing all right.
Yeah, I don't hate the idea. Like, I mean, this is you're in the entertainment business. Like, I know a lot of times that what we do and fans, they want their owners to win, and rightfully so. You want your team to win. It's also entertainment. I mean, you're also trying to put butts in the seat, right?
Yeah.
Like, how do these owners make money? TV contracts, the gate. How many folks walk through the gate and watch your product? And, you know, and that Urban Meyer, that helps. Tim Tebow, if he makes the team, that helps. And Trevor Lawrence, you had the first pick of the draft, so, I mean, you kind of had that gifted to you, but that helps as well.
It bothers me, the negative attention that Tebow is getting from former players,
okay,
or from media, because this is a relational business. Anything is relational, right? So for him to sign a league minimum deal to a coach that he has a relationship with, they have great chemistry, they had a great career together in Florida, it makes sense. It makes sense. Why wouldn't he give him a shot? It's a 53, it's a 90-man roster. He's not saying he's going to make the team. He didn't give him a two-year, $10 million deal.
Yeah.
He gave him an opportunity. A lot of the time when you get older in the league, when you get older in age, when you hit around that 30-year-old mark, it's about who you know. That's all it is. I was brought to Tampa Bay after I got cut here because Dirk Cutter was the head coach there. He drafted me in Jacksonville. It's all about who you know. No matter what business you're in, it's all about who you know. So they're trying to make this, oh, he's only getting this because, no, he has a relationship with Urban Meyer. So, yeah, Urban Meyer brought in Carlos Hyde. He has a relationship with Carlos Hyde. He coached him at Ohio State. You're going to bring in guys you trust. You're going to bring in guys you know. Same thing on the coaching staff. You're going to bring in guys you trust and know and want on your roster. Not guaranteed they'll make the team, but it's no surprise. It happens all around the NFL. It happens all around life. It's relational. So to hear former players go out there and say, oh, he's only getting this because of A, B, and C, no, you're silly. I guarantee there's a time in your career where you got an opportunity because of a relationship you had.
Yeah.
That's just part, of the game.
There's one reason that he got that. And I don't think Tebow would have came back anywhere else either. I think that the fact that it was, you know, Urban Meyer there in Jacksonville was the reason that Tim Tebow signed on there. You know, he retired from professional baseball and probably was done with sports. And you know, Urban Meyer came a-calling. And since he does have that relationship with Urban Meyer, and I've heard Urban even talk about his relationship with Tebow, saying it goes far beyond football. Like, it's almost like a fatherly figure, so to speak, and the relationship is really tight. And it's the same thing that happened, you know, when O'Brien came to the Texans. You got old New England guys. Casario came to the Texans, got old guys. I mean, you see that left and right around the NFL and all sports whenever you take a look at, you know, who new guys bring in. But I am intrigued to see what Urban Meyer does there in Jacksonville, because college coaches don't always have – you know, the best success. Saban was kind of meh. Pete Carroll's done a pretty good job in his second time back into the NFL. And he was in the NFL before college, too. So I almost have a tough time putting him in that same group of college coaches that go to the NFL. Jimmy Johnson was really good, though. Barry Switzer won a title. Now, was that because of the roster or was it because of him? Maybe a different topic for a different day. But to me, it's much more about the players in the NFL game than it is about the coach. I think coaches can win in college. I think it takes really good players to win in the NFL.
Really?
Coaches can help. Like, I mean, Belichick helped Brady. Brady helped Belichick. Yeah, I think that.
So it's more of a players. When it comes to winning the NFL, it's more players than coaches.
It's more about the roster, in my opinion.
More about the roster.
Where in college, I think a really good coach has more of an influence compared to other teams around the country. Once you have that roster in place.
Because in college, if you got the best talent, you're going to be in position to win. Would you agree with that?
Well, you're positioned to win, but you see a lot of teams with a lot of talent. They go like 9-3, or they go 10-2 and fall short of the college football play. Like, they underachieve slightly.
Yes.
Like, yeah, they win, you know, they're 9-3, 10-2, but they're not quite to that pinnacle. Or like, you know, Saban's Alabama team is always there. Like, even Dabo Sweeney at Clemson, it took him a long time to really get to that point.
Yeah.
And that's what happened whenever he finally had that roster that was full of, you know, five stars and top recruits and all of that. Like, Nick Saban, you tell me he's not as good a coach as, I don't know, take your random 10-6 team in the NFL. I think he is. He just wasn't in a great position in Miami. He didn't have a great quarterback. The roster was mediocre. But, you know, put him in charge of, I don't know, the Patriots instead of Belichick. Does he have close to similar success that Belichick had in New England with those teams loaded? Like, maybe Belichick's not the greatest example, because I think Belichick is the greatest NFL coach of all time. But let's say, I'm trying to think of a good example here. Who? Let's say Mike McCarthy. Let's say Nick Saban had every team that Mike McCarthy had. Do you think Saban has equal or better success than McCarthy has? I say it's really similar.
I don't know. That's tough. Can he do better with the Cowboys than Mike did last year? Maybe. I don't know. But his success in Green Bay was a lot, and I don't know. It's right situation, right time. I agree. When he got it with who's he with? Miami. It wasn't the best roster.
No.
It wasn't the best situation. Period. Right. So you put him in a better situation. Yeah, maybe he does. I think Saban's an awesome coach. No doubt about it. I think he's awesome. I just think it's different coaching scholarship guys and then coaching grown men.
For sure. I wonder how Miami would have been different if they signed Breeze and not Culpepper.
Ooh.
You know what I mean? Does Nick Saban ever go back to the college game? Does he have a great career in Miami where he wins a Super Bowl, maybe goes to four or five playoffs? You know, one move could have changed the trajectory of both of their careers. 713-572-4610. You know who's back in town today? Alex Cora, perhaps the ringleader of the cheating scandal a couple of years ago. His return, what he had to say about his return, next on Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610. Alongside Cecil Shorts, I'm Jeremy Branham. Robert Harris producing today's show. Alex Cora is back in Houston for the first time since, what are we calling it? Sign-stealing scandal? Is that what we're calling it?
Yeah, that's the correct.
If you've listened to me long enough, you know how much of a joke I think it is. But the sign-stealing scandal, first time Alex Cora, you looked at me funny.
You think it's so? Talk to me about it. I haven't heard your take on the everything going on with that.
So Alex Cora is back in town, the manager of the Boston Red Sox. Four-game series beginning this afternoon. Red Sox currently lead the wild card in the American League. A lot of folks were thinking that the Red Sox were going to be a bottom of the cellar team in the AL East. And here the Red Sox are, one of the better teams in the AL, currently leading the AL East wild card race. But Cora, the manager, spoke to the media before the game, and apparently on the Red Sox pregame Zoom regarding the Astros in 2017, this courtesy of Chandler Rome, a beat writer for the Astros for the Chronicle, Alex Cora saying, "People are going to ask why we did it. I don't know, man. We just did it. We just did it, and we put ourselves in a bad situation." So that's Alex Cora, the manager of the Boston Red Sox, on why the Astros sold signs back in 2017. Cora, of course, along with A.J. Hinch, Jeff Luhnow, were all suspended 1 year by Major League Baseball. Cora was fired by the Red Sox and then rehired by the Red Sox after a year. A.J. Hinch was fired by the Astros. Should have been rehired after a year, but was not. Instead, he went to Detroit. Jeff Luhnow out of baseball, probably because of how he handled the whole thing. But I wonder what the reaction is going to be to Alex Cora back at Minute Maid Park this afternoon. I don't know if they're going to put together like a little video montage of Alex Cora, but I don't think he'll get booed at all by the Houston Astro fans.
No, they shouldn't. I wouldn't boo him. He helped you win. Like, you can say what you want. I think sign stealing is a part of the game. That's just my humble opinion. Now, I don't know about the electronics and all that type of stuff that goes into it, but if I'm, for example, I know for a fact Jonathan Joseph would steal our signs. He would tell me after the game when I was in Jacksonville, "Hey, every time y'all put up one finger, you just run a 10-yard stop route. I knew it was coming. Every time y'all put up two fingers, I knew a slant was coming." Like, he just picked up it throughout the game. So if you're the opposite team and you're picking up on signs, you're picking up on things, yes, you're going to relay it to your other teammates, and you're going to figure out that that's the best chance for you guys to win. They got to do a better job of hiding those things. So as far as Cora coming back, he shouldn't be ridiculed at all, in my opinion. I wouldn't say he'd be loved or whatever, but he was part of that team to help y'all win a championship.
Yeah, he was part of the staff that won a championship. He was part of the staff that made Mookie Betts one of the best offensive players in baseball back in 2018. You asked my opinion on the sign stealing. It's basically what you said. Like, to me, sign stealing has been going on since baseball existed.
It's not new.
Like, there's documentaries on a team like in the 1920s that was stealing signs. Black Jack Morris, starting pitcher for the White Sox in the 80s, said Tony La Russa had some sort of system there at Old Comiskey Park where, I forget, something would light up in right center field whenever it was a fastball coming, and something wouldn't light up whenever it was an off-speed coming. Like, sign stealing is something that's been going on a long time in sports. I read that book, Astro Ball, by Ben Ryder of Sports Illustrated, the guy who put the Astros on the front cover of SI back in 2015. He said future World Series champions and actually got the prediction right. He wrote a book about the Astros after the 2017 season, kind of just talking about the season and them winning the World Series. And they would, you know, come out later that the Astros were stealing signs in 2017. And he would talk about how Carlos Beltran was such a big influence with the Astros in terms of their video work, and how you can look at video and see what a pitcher is throwing you, and you know, try to get an idea based on their – it's basically like a scouting report. You're going to go look at a pitcher. You're going to see what they're throwing. You're going to see how they're pitching you, things like that. Talked about how Alex Cora worked with them quite a bit as well. Now, none of that was, like, illegal. The illegal part of the sign stealing came whenever they put the trash can into motion and they were stealing live video of what was going on.
Right.
I have a general belief that stuff was going on throughout Major League Baseball as a whole, because Carlos Beltran, when he came to the Astros, said, "We're so far behind everybody else in technology." It's a quote in this book.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he says that we're behind everybody in terms of technology. We need to get on the same page. We need to catch up, is what he said.
Oh, wow.
And he came from the Yankees. And there's some reported stories that the Yankees and Red Sox had their own way of maybe stealing signs. There's been stories for years about the Blue Jays having an employee in the hotel above center field looking through binoculars, seeing signs. Like, this stuff happens. And, like, Major League pitchers know this. Major League Baseball pitchers know that everybody's trying to steal their signs. It's why they have complicated signs. It's why they change the sign to the runner at second. So I personally think it's been overblown by a mile. That's my personal stance.
Mm, yeah, we're on the same page. I mean... It's interesting, the quotes, though, that Beltran had.
Yeah, it's a great – I mean, it was a really good book. I read it way before the sign-stealing stuff came out. I read it right after they won the World Series and right after it came out, because I'm a fan of Ben Ryder, a fan of his work, and it's a really good book. But then I remembered – a and how they were behind. He felt like the Astros were way behind everybody else around Major League Baseball. And so and whenever he got there, they changed the way things were done. And like reading back at it now, now knowing what we do know,
right.
Like it's pretty easy to make the comparison. And of course, Carlos Beltran was the manager of the Mets for an offseason. And they got fired and never managed a game for the New York Mets because of his involvement with the sign-stealing scandal. In my opinion, all the people around Major League Baseball that were mad at the Astros, they weren't mad that the Astros were suing this. Because you actually have quotes from people. I think Joe Kelly quoted saying the Astros, like, they were rats and they shouldn't have spoke up, something like that. So, to me, more of the angst is that the fact that they actually talked about this, where it was kind of like a dark secret in Major League Baseball. But yeah, I feel like the whole thing's overblown. I feel like this was something that was running rampant around Major League Baseball. I felt a ton of teams were doing this around Major League Baseball. I feel everybody already knew this around Major League Baseball. So, I find it all overblown.
I'm with you. Like, how would you compare that? Because I look at the suspensions that everybody got. Cora, Luna, all those guys.
That goes to show you how much Major League Baseball thought of like, how heinous of an act this was, right? The Detroit Tigers hired A.J. Hinch the very first day, basically, that he was done with his suspension. The Boston Red Sox rehired the guy who was suspended for a year. So it gives you an idea of how much Major League Baseball thought of this. If they're rehiring the managers of two separate teams that were involved in this, it shows you they didn't care. How much money did George Springer get this offseason? It shows you the Blue Jays don't care.
Yeah.
Like to me, it's just all, like, I mean, it happened. It happened. The Astros were doing it. I feel like a lot of other teams were doing it. It's just not reported. And to me, it's just the fans just, it's very easy to target the Astros because they're certainly the face of this. Just like the face of the steroid era was Barry Bonds, Mark McGwire, Sammy Sosa, Rafael Palmeiro.
Yeah.
Those guys are the faces of it. The other guys were doing it too, but they're the faces of it. So the Astros are the faces of this, of a problem that was rampant around Major League Baseball.
My thing is, though, they're just going to find another way to do it. Like, it's not going to stop. Like, it's not going to stop. They'll just find a more technical way or more exclusive way to get what they were doing before. Like, it's not going to stop in Major League Baseball. It's not going to stop in any sport, whatever it is. And it's different in every sport. But in baseball, there's no way they're going to stop stealing signs. They're going, to me, that's just part of the game. It's part of the game to figure out what they're doing. Beltran said he watched film. Certain stance from the pitcher, wherever the case may be, and you figure it out. I mean, that's just what it is.
Well, there was that one playoff series where the Astros were facing the Rays, and Glasnow was tipping pitches, which is totally different.
Yes.
You know, tipping pitches where you're holding the glove, and Glasnow with a fastball was holding it at his nose, and his curveball, he was holding it down at his belt buckle. It's his fault. So I think there was a lot more of that, you know, probably was lumped into the cheating scandal, but whatever. I mean, that's the case. That's what happened. But I think if you wanted to eliminate it from the game, like, first off, Major League Baseball is providing all of this live footage. It's like, here you go. Take this stuff.
Right.
Have fun.
Right.
Just like they knew what was going on in the steroid era. Like, you're going to tell me that you didn't know Mark McGwire, Sammy Sosa in the summer of 98 were using steroids? Give me a break. But you know why they didn't care? Because they were saving Major League Baseball in the process. Coming off the strike in 94, they were having trouble getting butts in the seats. What saved baseball? The home run chase of 98.
Yeah.
Sammy Sosa, Mark McGwire. The faces of steroids. So they didn't care about that, just like they didn't really care about this. It's just easy to, you know, once it's out there, you got to do something, right? You got to cover your butts. So you got to do something, right? So I think that's kind of what led to all of this. I would say this, if you want to eliminate this from sports, like you want to, or at least baseball, if you want to eliminate sign stealing and like looking through binoculars, all that, give the pitcher and a catcher an earpiece. Done. Game over. They have it in college baseball. Catcher wears an earpiece, gets the sign, relays it to the pitcher. Don't have to worry about it.
I didn't know that was in college.
It's not
baseball.
So much about resolving the issue, right? Just about pointing blame.
I didn't know that was in college baseball.
Yep.
They got an earpiece.
They did that for pace of play. They did it for pace of play. Not even for sign stealing. The reason they put it in was for pace of play. for getting the sign in quicker so the game would be faster.
Wow.
Yeah. Easy enough, right? But also, it would also stop the sign stealing. 713-572-4610. Coming up next, James Harden is in the NBA playoffs with a team other than the Rockets. How do we feel about that? How would we feel? We won a championship in Brooklyn. That next on Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610. Alongside Cecil Shorts, I'm Jeremy Branham, Robo Harris Jr. Behind the glass. Couple more Astro notes. Yuli Gurriel and Yordan Alvarez not in the starting lineup today. Brian McTaggart of MLB.com reporting that Dusty Baker said that they nixed the idea to bring Alvarez yesterday, or bring him back yesterday. He decided to wait another day, but he's not in the lineup today. Gurriel is getting close, Baker said. He'll come in sometime later in this series. Said that neither one was hurt bad enough to go on the IL. I guess that's good news, although good. Them not being in the lineup is bad news. Mm-hmm. Baker said he hopes McCullers will return in the middle of June. So a few more weeks on Lance McCullers. And then Blake Taylor, Jose Urquidy called up today. Urquidy will start. Taylor available out of the bullpen. Andre Scubb and Ralph Garza Jr. have been optioned to AAA Sugarland, which is kind of cool. No, AAA game or AAA team in Sugarland. Been in that ballpark many times. Good place to watch a game. Nice for the Astros to have such a nearby affiliate. Astro lineup today, in case you're wondering. Altuve, McCormick, Bregman, Correa, Tucker, Diaz, Jones, Straw, Maldonado. I wanted the Astros to option Taylor Jones down to the minor leagues after he dropped that pop fly that cost him the game 2 days ago against San Diego. But I guess his services are needed with no Yordan Alvarez and no Yuli Gurriel in the Astros lineup today. So James Harden is in the playoffs with the Brooklyn Nets, which, by the way, who do you have coming out of the East and the West, Cecil?
Oh, coming out the East, it's hard to not go with the Nets. I don't really want to see the Nets in the championship. But the only doubt I have that the Nets is injuries. You know, with Kyrie kind of injury prone, and Kevin Durant coming off his Achilles. Kevin Durant looks fine. He's the closer. They have the perfect setup, in my opinion. And I think James Harden doesn't want to be the guy.
Yeah.
He can just run the show and do what he does best. And then, you know, KD can close the game. But I think the Nets will come out, and the West, I think it's the winner of the Lakers-Suns series. I think the winner of that series is going to come out the West.
Yeah, I think LeBron finds a way to get into the NBA Finals again this year. But although Anthony Davis not expected to play Game 5 with that groin injury, so LeBron's going to have to put on the cape because he's got no help there with the Lakers now with Anthony Davis being out. I don't see a team beating the Nets in the East. Like, they can't play defense worth a lick. I'm not sure they have to. I mean, they're scoring 140 points per game. And like, even if you go up against a team with like one or two shutdown defenders, they got three dudes.
It's still one more.
Like, there is a mismatch there on every trip up the floor, and they're playing really well right now too. So it's going to be tough for the Nets. To me, I think the Nets are going to win it all. I think that they end up facing the Lakers in the finals. You mentioned you don't want to see the Nets there. Why is that?
I think it goes to Harden. I didn't like how Harden left. I'm not a huge fan of, and I respect it. I'm not a huge fan of guys teaming up like that. I'm more of the old school NBA.
Yeah, right? I like it too.
That's just me. I have no problem you being a free agent and going where you want to go. I have no problem with that. I just don't like the force out thing. You know what I mean? I never want to say a player has too much power. But at the same time, to force your way out of a situation, oh, I'm just tired of being here. I don't want to be here. I don't want to go through this rebuild, whatever it is. I don't like that per se. Maybe I'm old school, right? I just don't like how James Harden, as great as he is, I don't like how he left and kind of left his team out the dry, kind of dogged his teammates the last press conference he was here. I wasn't a big fan of that. So I think that has a lot to do with it. Kyrie kind of rubs me the wrong way. I guess it's more personal stuff. I think they're awesome basketball players. It's just how they handle themselves sometimes just rubs me the wrong way. So, and then Kevin Durant, he's the biggest crybaby in the NBA. So that's why I'm not a big fan of the Nets. Nothing to do. They're awesome. They're fun to watch. If you put up 140 points a game, oh my gosh, yes, you're super fun to watch. Just personally, I got my battles with them.
Maybe they're the bad guy that the NBA needs to be in the finals to draw up the ratings against maybe LeBron's Lakers. Although I told you earlier that I'm not a LeBron fan.
Yeah,
I feel like, you know, he whines a lot. He cries a lot on the floor.
He does.
Like, he got poked in the eye the other day. It was like rolling around in pain. It was on the floor for like 25 minutes. Like, he's, oh yeah, that's right. I remember what he said now. He was like, oh yeah, I was seeing three. I saw three rims, but I just shot to the middle one and I made it. Like, ever since the beginning, and this isn't really even LeBron's problem. It's kind of like the way that he was handled and the way he was brought up was like, all LeBron cares about is his brand. Like, and everything that LeBron says and does is about elevating that brand. And that's always kind of rubbed me the wrong way. Just like the way he handles the media, the way he talks to folks. Like, I just feel it's always about the brand of LeBron.
Yeah.
And I feel like everything that he does is kind of fabricated and manipulated to help the brand. And look, he's a great player. Don't get me wrong. Like, I mean, he's amazing. And I want to see him in the finals, too. Like, the fact that I don't like him doesn't mean I don't want to see him in the finals, because to me, I want to see drama. I want to see entertainment. Oh, yeah, I want to see storylines.
Sure.
And to me, that's the sexiest matchup. Lakers, Nets.
Healthy
Lakers. Yeah, because Anthony Davis needs to be back, too.
Yeah.
713-572-4610. Andre's on the line. Andre, what's up?
Hey, man, I just don't want to give a perspective on the James Harden leaving thing, you know, but I don't like the fact that he left, you know, and all that, you know, but the real reason why he left, you just like Deshaun Watson didn't like upper, you know, for management or whatever, obviously he had a problem with what was happening with Tim Fertitta, because you know, everybody left. The coach left. You know, his favorite manager. I mean, his GM left. I mean, so that's the real big. That's the biggest reason why he left. Feel like he didn't have, you know, that support that he needed. You know, I mean, and I get it. And once again, I don't like that he left either. But you know, we have to, you know, look at it from everybody's, you know, put yourself in their shoes.
Right.
You know, so.
You feel like Harden didn't have Tillman's. I guess you felt like he didn't have Tillman's blessing, or what?
Well, see, the thing is, it ain't about that. It's about how Tillman came in and how he was doing things, just like how Jack Easterby came in.
Okay.
He started doing things, and then with all of that, and when Jack Easterby came in, you know, everybody started leaving. When you know, Tillman Peter, you know, after a couple of years, I guess they got tired of him. You know, Darryl Moore left. I mean, the coach left. I mean, so. You know, it seemed like his whole success, the reason why he felt like he was successful, the real reason why he felt like he was successful, it all left to him. Probably.
Yeah.
And that's the perspective I'm trying to put myself in his shoes and see if from maybe how he's seeing it.
Yeah, because Tillman wanted him. Tillman wanted Harden. He was gonna give him over $50 million, which would have been the first player to make over $50 million in a year. So, I mean, Tillman wanted him.
Jack Easterby wanted the quarterback.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he wasn't doing it right. He wasn't going about it right. And maybe, you know, and don't get me wrong, I do feel like Jack Easterby has a whole lot. I mean, not Jack Easterby, but Tillman Fertitta has a little bit more spunk to getting it back together, more than, you know, Jack Easterby, of course. But, you know, and he may get it back together. But, you know, and he may learn as he goes, because he's a businessman, you know. But. Right, at the point of attack, I mean, he just wasn't happy. You know, he felt like he lost everything, probably.
My issue with Harden is not that he left, it's how he left.
Right.
Right, the bashing, the coming in out of shape, the not talking to the media, not showing up and doing certain things. Don't bash your teammates. If you want to get out, cool, but don't bash your teammates. Don't put everything on them. Like, just don't do that. You put them in, you're not showing up to camp, you're not coming in shape. They got to answer those questions. So now you're putting your situation on your 11 other, 12 other, 13 other players. They got nothing to do with it.
Yeah, he's throwing them under the bus.
Like, don't throw them under the bus. I just don't like that. Like,
and he's bashing them at the same time. And I agree with Andre's point. I think part of the reason that James Harden, and I didn't disagree with you, Andre. I was just trying to clarify a little bit. Morey leaving, D'Antoni leaving, certainly, I think, played a factor in Harden wanting to go. And he saw the writing on the wall. This was a team that was about to go through the rebuilding process.
Right.
But Tillman did want him. You know, he's willing to give him a lot of money. And the highest yearly salary of any player in NBA history. But, yeah, I think Harden didn't care about that. Harden didn't care about the money. He felt Morey leaving, D'Antoni leaving. The writing was on the wall. And he wanted to get out. And now he's potentially on the best team in the NBA and the Brooklyn Nets. And I pose the question, how would you feel with James Harden winning a title in Brooklyn? 713-572-4610. Let's go to John. John, what's up?
Hey, what's going on? Man, I agree with what Cecil was saying. I don't have a problem with him leaving. I have a problem with the way that he left. And if he would have left in a more professional manner, I've been cheering him on the whole season, hoping that he get that ring and that title this year, because he's a good player, and he was good for H-Town up until that point, and he deserved it, but I just don't like the way he left at the end. And, you know, I'm with Cecil. I hope he don't get it. other than that... Other than that, you know, my opinion about it would have been different if it would have left a different way. I hang up and listen to what y'all got to say. Y'all have
appreciate it, John. Yeah, I agree with him. Like, I never liked Harden in Houston. I'm not even going to lie.
Oh, really?
Like, yeah, I didn't like him in Houston.
Why?
Because I thought he was a superstar, but I never felt like he was going to be the best player on a championship team. I felt he was a little bit of a number grabber, if you will. Like, yeah, he had, you know, a lot of assists, and I don't think he was like a selfish player or anything like that, but I just never was a huge fan. You know, the fact that he would disappear in some playoff games, that made me a little bit, you know, sour on him. Threw Kevin McHale under the bus.
Yeah,
we got him
for sure.
fired
for sure.
in like the
for
first
sure.
week of the season. So like this past year wasn't the first year that he came into the season out of shape.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, he was selfish at times, off the floor, not on the floor, because he was a willing passer. And he was a great player. He still is a great player.
He is,
I just don't
sure.
think he was ever going to be the best player on a championship team. And I think that's going to hold true because he's not the best player in Brooklyn.
No, KD.
Yeah, KD's the best player in Brooklyn. 713-572-4610. Let's go to Dave. Dave, what's on your mind? Dave. All right, Dave, you'll have to call back. 713-572-4610. Dave dropped. As far as James Harden winning a championship in Brooklyn, I guess I don't want to see it either. You know, I posed the question. I hadn't thought about my own answer, but I don't want to see it either. Just because, like, he was so close to getting it done in Houston. And everybody will go back to the year when Chris Paul pulled his hamstring. The Rockets missed like 87 three-pointers in a row in that Game 7 against the Warriors when the Warriors were arguably one of the best teams. I honestly think that Warriors dynasty was one of the best dynasties in modern sports history. The fact that they won, was it three titles in 4 years, like that.
Yep.
They set the record for the most wins in a regular season, which to me is something that kind of gets slept on when you talk about that dynasty. And the Rockets were right there. They were on the cusp of beating that Warrior team, but they never did. Like the almost doesn't do it for me. Like, you're not going to go back in, you know, 15, 20 years and look back at James Harden's career. You're not going to look back at that stretch and that tenure of the Houston Rockets and say, you know, what if they were so close? Like, you don't get trophies for runner ups.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You were the Western Conference final losers to the Golden State Warriors. I don't care how it happened. You lost. It's about wins and losses. Yes, they were close. They were right there. They gave it the old fight. But when I look back at James Harden Rockets' tenure, it's going to be as the almost. I wouldn't even call it a failure because they were good. They had some good seasons. Harden put up great numbers. So I don't know if I put
MVP.
I wouldn't put the failure label on it, but it was they weren't champions.
Yeah.
And ultimately, that's what, you know, great players get defined by.
I think he's in the best situation he'll be in, obviously, right? He doesn't want to be the guy to take the team to the championship. I think he wanted to. Early on in his career, I think he understood how hard it was, how much effort it took. And I'm not saying he didn't give effort, but I think he's just awesome. But I think he realized, I need more help. I think he realized, I don't want to be that guy.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas he can get his points, get his assists, do what he does at a high level. But now he got Kyrie to pass the ball to, or KD take the last shot, or those guys can take over, and I can still can play my game, and I don't got to worry about that.
I mean, he was passive. I mean, I understand that he took some big shots, and I understand he hit some big shots. The one moment, and I can't remember the exact game, but it was in the playoffs. It was against Golden State. It might have even been in that series, or maybe it was the year before. But the one moment that'll always define James Harden to me as a player, they were playing the Warriors. I think they were down by two. They got the ball. They were bringing it up the floor. I think he's about to take a shot. You know, I think he's about to shoot the three, looking for the win. He finds the trailer, Dwight Howard. Behind the three-point line, passes it to Dwight with like 3 seconds to go, down by two in a playoff game against Golden State. And Dwight's like, what do you want me to do with this? Like, I'm behind the three-point line. He ended up passing to, I don't even know, Ariza maybe, jacked up a three, they miss, Rockets lose. But that's the one defining moment that I will always resonate with me in James Harden's career. Bringing it up the floor against the best team in the NBA in a playoff game, down by two, and you pass to the trailer, Dwight Howard.
So
what are you thinking? Like, that's that's one shying away from the moment,
yeah.
And that's just a bad basketball play.
Yeah.
How are you giving it the ball to the big man behind the three-point line?
Yeah.
With the clock winding down.
In the playoffs
against the best team, that's shying away from the moment.
Yeah.
And not only that, it's one thing shying away from the moment. Like, if he would have passed that to a guy who could knock down a three, it's a little different story. But it's shying away from the moment with a lack of awareness, which is really what – like, he wanted rid of the basketball that bad. He gave it to Howard behind the three-point line.
Dwight Howard.
Like, I'm sorry, but I couldn't get over that moment. I couldn't get over Game 6 of the Western Conference semifinals against the San Antonio Spurs. Elimination game, season on the line, at home.
Yeah.
You get embarrassed out of the gym.
Not even close.
You don't even play in the fourth quarter. It's a blowout, an elimination game.
Not even close.
So that's what resonates with me. Harden put up the numbers here, won the MVP here, did some things that, frankly, no other NBA player has ever done here in a gimmicky offense, kind of made to build some stats for the star player. Never got the job done.
This goes back to what we talked about with Naomi and the tennis and the media. If he would have just left differently, more professional, the media would have took, you know, more pleasure to it or accepted it a little bit more. It wouldn't have came off so negative, right? And then the view, I think the view of most people in Houston, okay, if he wins, we'll still cheer for him. We understand because everybody can see what's going on. But we'll still cheer for him. He's still a rock at the heart. His jersey be in the rafters. Well, Tillman, I guess this year or whatever, as soon as possible. You know, he'll still be a Houston legend. There's tons of things in the community, the whole nine. But how he went about it is what rubbing everybody the wrong way. It's how he went about it, bashing his players, bashing his teammates, coming in out of shape, just being selfish, right? Only thinking of himself. It just got bad taste in a lot of people's mouth.
Yeah, I mean, you either are or you aren't a Harden fan. Like, people still love Harden in this city. And like, it was a conversation when he was a Rocket. You either like Harden or you don't. A lot of people didn't like Harden. They thought he shied away in these moments. I was one of them. I called him James Hardashian when he was dating Chloe. Like, I mean, he cared, I thought, more about being a star than he did about winning. And I think there are certain plays in his career where that showed. I mean, that resonated. But even on the text line here, 713-572-4610, y'all crazy. Harden has been by far the best player on the Nets. Replace Harden with any other superstars. Do any of those Rockets teams win a title? No. Harden never had a super team in Houston. If the Rockets had Harden, or if they had LeBron instead of Harden, do any of those Rockets teams win? I think so.
Absolutely. Kevin Durant, absolutely.
Yeah.
No doubt about it. No doubt about it.
And I don't think Harden wins with what LeBron had, like in Cleveland. We had Kyrie. I don't think Harden and Kyrie win a title in Cleveland that year. Does Harden win a championship in Golden State instead of Steph? Maybe that first year when he had Klay and Draymond Green? I don't think so. I think Steph Curry is one of the more underrated players in NBA history. That's kind of a bold statement to make with a minute left on the show.
Really?
Yeah, I think so. I think he and Larry Bird are two of the more underrated players in NBA history.
Why? Why Steph?
Because I think he's underappreciated. I think what Steph does over the course of his career, won multiple championships, and he gets looked at like he's an afterthought. People feel like he didn't win anything before Kevin Durant. He did. I don't think Draymond Green and Klay Thompson are that good. I feel like Steph Curry made them, kind of like Peyton Manning made Harrison and Wayne.
Mm. I do think he changed the game. I think the way he plays the game is the reason why the game is played right now.
And probably not for the better.
Not for the better.
Probably not for the better. Cecil, I enjoyed it.
Always fun, man.
Robert did all the hard work behind the glass producing the show. For Cecil Shorts, I'm Jeremy Branham. Talk to you next time. Later, Houston. How do you like your nuts?
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.